morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning.
First case for argument this morning is Asher against Baxter International. Mr. Westman.
May it please the court, Barry Weprin, Milberg Weiss, Richard Hines, and the back for plaintiff appellant Asher. Your Honor, I think there are two legal issues in this case of first impression in the circuit that are relevant to the district court's decision, essential to the district court's decision, and also are likely to arise in other securities cases. The first of which is whether written forward-looking statements trying to take advantage of the safe harbor in the PSLRA can incorporate by reference cautionary statements from other documents. The second is whether oral statements not covered by the safe harbor rule but under B Speaks Caution can be found to bespeak caution based upon cautionary language contained somewhere else and not even referenced in the statement with respect to the oral statement here. As Your Honor knows, the PSLRA allows incorporation by reference specifically in the safe harbor for oral statements, but for written statements, there's no such allowance. And, you know, I think...
Counsel,
yes.
Are you agreeing that the statements, if properly incorporated, are sufficient?
Your Honor, no, Your Honor. I don't.
The reason I ask this is because this is, in the end, a fraud on the market case.
Yes, it is.
And it therefore shouldn't matter whether the revelations are in this statement or someplace else. Anything that reaches the market will affect the market price. And in a fraud on the market theory, rather than an individual reliance theory, it shouldn't matter where the disclosures are.
Well, Your Honor, that's true in the sense, although I think that obviously we agree that there is an efficient market for this stock, but it's really not perfectly efficient. So I guess our position would...
It's just a fraud on the market case. I mean,
it is, yes.
If you're arguing fraud on the market, you've got to take bitter with the sweet.
Well, but Your Honor, I mean, just a statement, you know, when they make a statement in a press release and they're referencing unspecified SEC documents, some of which may be significantly older than the press release, it seems to me that doesn't, it's not the same. It's not the same thing as if the cautionary statements were in the press release itself.
I want to ask you about the ultimate year-end performance. Isn't Baxter's ultimate year-end performance arguably relevant in determining whether those projections were made in light of the negative information rather than in spite of it?
Your Honor, I think that first of all, under the because this is a motion to dismiss, that really is beyond the realm of the complaint, and I don't think it's proper to take judicial notice of the of those for the truthfulness of them. And I think, and as we say in our brief, there are several suspicious elements to the way those were done. But I think I'd like to really say that we do not agree with defendants that the year-end performance materially met the commitments, and they call them commitments, not projections. I think when you look at the statement, you have to look at the strength of the statement, and I think the best place where that's exemplified is on in the January 2002 release, A88, where they say for the eighth consecutive year, Baxter International met its annual earnings and cash flow commitments. They then go on to state the commitments for 2002, which were previously mentioned in a press release in November. At the end of the year, in two of the three divisions, they fell substantially short of meeting their commitments. It's only in the medication delivery that they came approximately where they were. In renal, the commitment was high single digits, let's say 8 or 9, and for the year they made 2%. In bioscience, they were claiming mid-teens, say 15, 16, 17, and they came at 11%. So they were all 50% in bioscience and 75% in renal. I don't think that's substantially making their commitments. I read to you what they said in January 2002. In January 2003, they didn't say we substantially met our commitments. They essentially said, and the press release in the record, you know, we did very well under the circumstances.
If the projections incorporated the negative information that you have identified, then is it misleading to fail to set forth that negative information separately?
If the answer is it depends, Your Honor, on where it's set forth, but I think ultimately my answer would be yes, because again, the negative information, the negative information that we're, which, you know, if it's something reasonably approximate in time, and it's the information that we said, then I think, at least in the fraud in the market, I think it's reasonable to assume the fraud in the market encouraged it. It's a different issue, really, though, whether they can benefit from the safe harbor, because the incorporation by reference provision, the oral safe harbor, is a narrow exception to the general rule that statements should not incorporate by reference. I think the fact that it only applies to oral statements, it's not really just expressio unis. It's logical.
Let's just assume that since this is a fraud on the market case, all information available to the public will be taken into account. The thing that most interests me is having your view on how detailed that risk disclosure needs to be. What was it that you think needed to be disclosed that was not in the public record for Baxter?
Well, I think you have to look at that in the context of the definiteness and the type of forward-looking statements they're making. And I think that the statements they made were the commitments, and they were made in face of problems that were acknowledged. And they said basically that we're still going to make 8% in renal. And I think that the fact that they had
We know what Baxter said.
Yeah.
The question I asked is, what information do you think needed to be disclosed to be, in the language of the statute, a meaningful disclosure of risk?
In the renal area, that they had not been able to meet their internal budgets in prior years, that even at the time of the commitment, they were growing below.
You may not be getting the gist of my question. The answer, what you're now saying is, what they had to reveal was all the other information constituting the truth. But that would just abolish the safe harbor. The idea of the safe harbor is that you don't have to reveal everything needed to make the statement true, otherwise it wouldn't be a safe harbor at all. So what I'm looking for is a view on what is necessary to make a meaningful risk disclosure, something other than revealing the whole truth.
Well, I think that one of the things they could have disclosed were the problems with expansion in Latin America, that it was very dependent on, that their plans for renal in particular were very dependent on expansion in Latin America, and because of
was
the...
Was that
the
otherwise not known in the of public information what percentage of their returns came from Latin America?
I don't believe it was, Your Honor.
That would not be in the 10-K?
I don't believe it is.
Do you view that as boilerplate?
The fact that they mm-hmm. when they revealed it was mm-hmm. in Latin America? No, because their ability, because of the problems that they'd had previously, their ability to grow in the renal unit at the rates they were depending on was dependent on that, and I think that is a significant disclosure. I don't think that's boilerplate. I think the fact that their lack of a low cost product in the renal area, I think is something that needs to be disclosed, because we already it was something that
why was this, in your view, not already in the public domain?
Well, because
what products they were selling in the renal area is already public knowledge.
But they had, in a sense, they talked about the legal issues with respect to their, in the disclosures that they incorporated by reference, they talked about legal issues, but they didn't talk about any other problems with these products.
Look, we may just not be communicating, but I'm assuming we need to talk about all the information in the public domain. Was their product mix not in the public domain?
Yes, Your Honor, it was.
When was the time of the precipitous drop that ended the class period?
It was June 18th, 2002, following the announcement of their second quarter earnings.
2002?
Yes.
Because I'm trying to look at this. I guess it's not part of your record, at least, but certainly public record, about the price of the stock, and it seemed that after this drop, it went back and then had a long drop. I don't know what who's actually the injured person, whether somebody that sold at the right time or not. But at least as of that date, is everything fully disclosed?
We believe that the in a material sense, yes, because I think the market recognized that there were severe problems. With the two units, two of the three units, and again, the significance that it's two of the three units, I think, is very important because, you know, as this court has said on a number of occasions, I mean, the important thing in valuing the stock is not what the company is doing going forward, and a company that has one successful unit and two unsuccessful units is a very different company than a company with three successful units, which is what they had committed to, in their use their language.
Would you say that your biggest problem with the statements here is that the language used is nearly identical in different statements?
I think that's true. That really demonstrates the fact that they made no serious attempt in the press releases to have cautionary language that was tied to what was being discussed. I mean, it was the same, not just in the class period, and we point out in our brief that if you go back previously, you know, this is the same language they used for several years, and every disclosure in the press releases during the class period is exactly the same. And I think that you have to, again, particularly when you're talking about a safe harbor that arguably can protect knowingly false statements, I think you have to be very careful about the disclosure that you require. And I think that, you know, a disclosure that doesn't, that isn't as material as the misstatement is something that really should not be allowed. I mean, it's the...
Do you think there was any guidance as to which areas presently posed a potential danger?
Well, the only thing is in the disclosures in November and January, I mean, there clearly was some negative information about the renal unit, but they then went ahead and committed to high single-digit growth in the renal unit, and I think that, at least at that time, sort of convinced the market that they could prosper in the renal unit despite those problems. I see I'm in my rebuttal time.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Weffern. Mr. Kipp.
May it please the court, Matthew Kipp on behalf of the defendant. Judge Easterbrook, to go to your point about what constitutes a sufficient disclosure or cautionary statement under the first prong of the safe harbor, I would invite the court's attention to Harris v. Ivax in the 11th Circuit, and then Judge Castillo's opinion in Stavros of a year ago. But the substance of the analysis is really, are there factors disclosed that relate to the company's business that put investors on notice?
Mr. Kipp, here's my problem.
Sure.
How can this be resolved on a motion to dismiss? In other words, how can we determine as a matter of law that the forward-looking projections included consideration of the negative information rather than it was made in disregard of the adverse information in an attempt to artificially inflate a number?
Well, Judge Rovner, the answer to that question is you look at the cases even decided prior to the Reform Act by this circuit, whether it's DeLeo or Raisi or Healthcare Compare, that there simply are insufficient allegations as a matter of law to give this court the ability to rule that these forward-looking statements somehow lacked a reasonable basis.
Okay, but how can a cautionary statement be of any use when it's merely a listing of all potential industry pitfalls? I mean, at a minimum, shouldn't a cautionary statement identify what concerns are actually relevant to that particular forward-looking statement that could cause the actual results to materially differ materially?
Well, the answer is yes, but we know from this court's holdings that forecasts themselves are inherently indefinite.
But if the answer is yes, how are they? How are the disclaimers attached to these statements adequate? Because they're perfectly generic. They say whether we'll achieve this depends on the market and the international economy and whether people sue us and whether our patents are enforceable. They don't do anything, at least not the ones attached to these statements. They don't do anything to help you figure out what the discount to be attached to this particular projection is. There may be other stuff published that does, but these disclosures don't do that.
Well, I think these disclosures get you at least part of the way, Judge Easterbrook.
How can they get you at least part of the way when they were identical to the disclosures that were attached to the two prior projections, which were met? They give no information that suggests that one of them is shakier than another.
Simply because we continue to reiterate them. You don't see us saying, listen, going forward, there are smooth seas ahead. What we say, these continue to affect our industry and our business.
That's exactly the point. If you're an investor, what you'd really love to know is the median of the projection and the standard deviation, that is the error bars that are attached to it. And generic disclosures that are the same for every projection withhold that information.
I follow. But then you go and you look at the company's annual report. You look at its 10-K. And I would disagree with you if you were simply to say that these are generic disclosures that would be applicable to any business.
Well, wait a minute. Are you arguing that ultimate year-end performance is dispositive as to whether those statements were material misleading at the time? Is that what you're arguing?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. We're simply saying that the situation that plaintiffs present here makes it untenable for any business trying to perform if it suffers some kind of mid-year price drop. According to plaintiff's theory, anyone could come in and sue, simply say that there was internal discord at a company, and be entitled to discovery. But the Reform Act simply doesn't allow that. In fact, that's why Congress enacted the Reform Act, such that cases like this wouldn't go forward. And I would submit to you that under case law that even pre-existed the Reform Act from the circuit, this case doesn't survive, but it certainly doesn't survive after the Reform Act. I don't know if I...
Unfortunately, your problem leaves us without, dare I say it, a meaningful definition of the word meaningful. You, instead of using the word meaningful in the Act, would say formulaic.
I would.
But formulaic and meaningful are, one would think, different.
They are
generic would be enough, because that's a fair description of these disclosures. They're generic.
They are generic.
I understand Baxter dislikes generic competition from the generic competitors.
Yeah.
Why is it using generics in its own stuff?
And I would only take issue with you, Judge Easterbrook, on the fact that I think it goes beyond simply generic disclosures. When you see us discussing the A, the AF, the AX dialyzers.
Look,
you're not discussing them, you're listing them.
They identify virtually every factor that could ever affect a financial outlook. But what seems to be missing is an identification of which particular factors could impact each particular forward-looking statement.
Judge Rovner, you're right that there is not a fulsome or even any kind of detailed discussion about which factors individually might affect performance going forward. However, the company clearly is trying to satisfy the standards, the dictates, of the safe harbor by listing that there are a number of factors that do affect its forward-looking statement. And just to harken back to your language, Judge Easterbrook, and Wildgoss or even Eckstein, I mean, the market is sophisticated collectively. And when you see these forward-looking statements by themselves, definite.
That's a different line of argument. That's an argument that you want to take into account disclosures Baxter made other than those in this generic risk warning.
Right.
But then one wonders whether that can be done at the pleading stage rather than later in the case.
And we would argue...
The district court didn't mention any of those other disclosures.
No, that is right. But obviously this court can affirm on any grounds supported by the record. And again, I would submit to you that this case doesn't meet the paradigms that this court set forth in cases such as the Leo. I mean, this case at the end of the day, Judge Easterbrook, is a fraud by hindsight case, but a bad one at that, an egregious one at that, because we don't have any kind of death spiral or any other very negative corporate
event. What in the language of the statements gave any meaningful notice of issues that might impact the projection? Can you maybe that'll help if you...
Well, it would help. Sure, Judge Rovner. What we're saying in the statements is that we're making projections. They're future results. We say explicitly, they may not come true. They're based on our best estimates. You should know that there are a variety, a number of factors that, in fact, may cause results to differ from these projections. And in
okay,
fact,
and what of those factors is not a boilerplate of any and all industry pitfalls?
One would be the fact that they had difficulties with their AAF and AX dialyzers. Another would be the fact that they had to let 360 people go because they're restructuring their renal division. Another would be that they operate in a very competitive industry subject to technological change. Everyone knows.
Well, that one is that's pretty generic. So you were doing well.
Yeah. Thank you, and let it be noted. Then the other ones do lapse. I concede they do lapse into a certain kind of generic sense, but the fact that the company is subject to differing exchange rates, because over half of its revenue comes from foreign sources. Sure, other companies that do international business face that same kind of pressure, but this one in particular does, and we disclose that. We also disclosed that we took a charge of $150 million when we had deaths related to the dialyzer problem. So I would submit to you that if at least you look to the one court of appeals, or there are two, you have Harris v. Ibex and you have Helwig versus Vencor. And the disclosures in Harris certainly aren't any more robust or substantive than the ones we're dealing here, at least a cautionary statement.
Is the $10 million loss of the product that failed or in production, is that something that is material?
No, absolutely not, Judge Mannion. You have to remember Baxter is a company with $8 billion in revenues every year, so we're talking about 0.8% What we're talking about boilerplate here. What's really boilerplate are these allegations in the complaint that Baxter was subject to some kind of internal discord. We certainly don't see that level of detail that this course has required in other opinions.
Do you not need discovery for that?
No, you don't, actually. If you read Healthcare Compare or Razy or Roots Partnership, those are all motion to dismiss cases. You need, it's certainly in the Reform Act regime, you need to come forward with some kind of detailed substantive allegation of either an internal memo that kind of conflicts with the forecast or some kind of report or something with substance. Otherwise, any plaintiff can come in on a stock price drop and say that there were internal troubles here and they didn't disclose them, so we get to discovery. If the court has any other questions, I'm happy to answer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Kipp. Anything further, Mr. Weber?
Very briefly, Your Honor. I think that if you read some of the cases we cite in our brief that talk about what is meaningful disclosure, such as the Trump case, they have very specific language that's directed toward the specific product or business. I mean, the Trump's opinion, which is the opinion that the Congress relies upon for describing the Speaks question, it says the Taj Mahal will be the largest hotel complex in Atlantic City, twice the room capacity of any other. No other casino operator has had experience operating a complex of this size. No assurance can be given that once open, the Taj Mahal will be profitable or that it will generate cash flow. I mean, that's a very specific disclosure that negates the positive thing.
I would think 100% certainty that if you were filing that lawsuit, you would say that was a totally generic disclosure that any idiot who knew nothing about the operations of Trump could have written.
Guess what? We'd agree.
And again, on
so you think that's adequate? Seems to me you lose this case.
No, I disagree, Your Honor.
All right, so you think it's not
Uh-oh.
Adequate?
Well, no. I mean, I think that is something that the court and Congress have certainly held is adequate. In my opinion,
well,
whether it's adequate or not is irrelevant. But the TSO, the safe harbor it allows a privilege. Forward-looking statements are a privilege. They were banned until 1978. They're sharply delineated what you can and what you can't do. And you can incorporate by reference in a written statement, and you have to have meaningful cautionary disclosures. Just one thing, Judge Mannion, with respect to the $10 million of destroyed recombinant, I think why that's significant, it's not the $10 million loss as such, but it's evidence of quality control problems with recombinant, which they mention as one of their key products in the bioscience area, and there was no disclosure anywhere about quality control problems before or after the incident that we still have disclosed incident to the public that we mention in our complaint. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.